Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked onto website kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington, so very special. Our Town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, from bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We may finally be moving beyond the isolation of the dreaded COVID disease. Thanks to COVID, most of us literally gave up meeting new people during the past 2 years. In fact, most of us barely held on to the people we already knew during the lockdown. But as our regular listeners know, KPTZ kept marching along to its own particular beat all during COVID. We continued to broadcast throughout the pandemic. We became even more essential to this community. Our Monday morning weekly broadcast of county health summaries became essential listening. Port Townsend City Manager John Morrow is now a regular voice on the airwaves. Our disc jockeys and hosts rose to the occasion and kept on producing high-quality shows. This show, Our Town, continued all through the pandemic. Sure, we did most of it by Zoom, and it wasn't quite up to snuff, technically speaking, but we had some fascinating guests, including our new mayor, David Faber, the eclectic musician, artist The Spoon Man, high school student Melanie Bacon, police chief Tom Olson, Sarah Panhelligan from Center Valley Animal Rescue, and Rocky Friedman of the Rose Theater. Those are just a few. Listening to Our Town is a safe and definitely non-infected way to meet some of the passionate, vibrant people who make Jefferson County very riveting. My guest today is an outstanding crusader, a woman with a mission. My guest is Erin Redding, who is the co-founder of the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society. As the name denotes, the Psychedelic Society is a group that is pushing to have natural psychedelics decriminalized and ultimately legalized. Before we get to that, let's take a few minutes to get to know a bit about Erin and her background. So welcome to the show, Erin.
Thank you.
I'd like to start at the very beginning. Are you a local girl born and bred in the Olympic Peninsula?
I am not, but I was born in the state of Washington, just north of Seattle, outside of Bothell area. And I've been on the peninsula working since 2010 and living here since 2016.
Okay. And you went to high school where?
In Mill Creek, Washington, at Jackson High School.
Okay. And kids are notorious for labeling each other. You know, they will say, you know, he's a nerd, she's a jock, whatever. What do you think people thought of you? Not what you thought of you, but...
I think I was in between a lot of groups. I was really into the local Seattle music scene. I played sports. I was academically an achiever, and I had a lot of friends in a lot of different groups.
Okay. Were you raised in an environment where you were expected to go on to university?
Yes, definitely. I was expected to do very well in school and go to college.
Okay. And did you have it all mapped out that you were going to go to X college and do Y when you supposedly grew up?
I did not. I thought I might go out of state, but I ended up back at UW and was very happy to be there. I love Washington.
Okay. And what did you end up majoring in?
I majored in philosophy and minored in geology.
Okay. Now, those on the surface seem very different, but can you explain to me how you sorted out in your head?
Yeah. So at the time, I was really into mountaineering, almost obsessed with the mountains. And so I would go into the mountains and I would think about philosophy and I would study the rocks. And to me, they fit together very well. And geology and philosophy are both big picture ways of looking at the world. So geology, looking at the larger planet and its story, and then philosophy, the story of humans and the way we think and the cosmos. So they fit together very nicely in my world.
Huh. And what did you imagine that you would use that for? Where did you see yourself heading career-wise?
That's a good question. I don't think I had any idea at the time I was in undergrad. I knew I loved the mountains. I thought maybe being a wilderness guide. I also taught piano lessons at the time, and I loved that work, so I thought I might continue doing that. It was a big question.
So when you graduated, you didn't have a clear path in front of you?
I did not, and I was pretty disenchanted with the academic world when I first graduated because the philosophy program at UW was very analytical, and it felt more like a practice in argumentation than a way of living. which is not what I was looking for.
Okay. And when you graduated, were you one of the many who were had quite a bit of student debt to work off?
I was not for my undergrad.
Oh, that's good. Lucky. A lot of people, that colors what they think about everything.
Absolutely.
So what did you actually do immediately?
I continued teaching piano lessons. I continued climbing mountains incessantly. And I also tutored some kids. So I had a full-time job doing that work and squeezed in mountains in the time in between.
But obviously, at some point, you decided to go back into academics.
Yeah. So as soon as I graduated from college, I took mushrooms for the first time. My first psychedelic. I'd never smoked pot, never smoked tobacco, was very much a child of the DARE program and the drug war. But I spent a year in my undergrad, the last year I was going to college, reading about psychedelics because someone had mentioned that they were relevant to philosophy. And so I started reading about them, realized I was being really hypocritical, saying I was studying reality and yet not participating in this way of shifting the way I experience the world. I started to feel very guilty. And when I graduated, took them for the first time, and it completely revolutionized the way I look at the world and understand myself and the human species, the planet, Earth, ecology, everything. And
can you explain that a little bit more, what you mean?
Yeah. So when I first took mushrooms, my experience of time completely changed. My experience of my inner world, the visions I saw when I opened my eyes, the way I, what I noticed, what I paid attention to, the details, aesthetics, art, all these things that were not part of my experience that thus far in life suddenly opened up. And I realized there was so much more than I was aware of. And as a philosopher, that was fascinating. And I couldn't understand why these medicines weren't part of philosophy and psychology and science and all these different inquiries into the world. So I continued reading about them, and occasionally, you know, like once a year would have an experience. And it became very clear that I wanted to study them more deeply, and found a graduate program where there were people who were at the time openly studying psychedelics, which was very rare. This is like 2004. And I went to school for grad school in 2007. And it was before the huge psychedelic renaissance.
Okay. And where did you go to school?
I went to grad school at the California Institute of Integral Studies in the Philosophy, Consciousness, and Cosmology program.
So your early experience with psychedelics, did you do it alone, or were you with a group or a mentor?
I was with a very good friend. And it was also her first time. Out in nature.
Okay. Sounds good.
Oh, and our dogs were there.
Okay. And the California Institute of Integral Studies, explain that a little bit. That's not a label that rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, it's not a typical academic institution. It instead of being very mental focused, it's bringing in mind, body, spirit, soul, planet. The philosophy program I was in was very focused on not only listening to, like, it wasn't just thinking, it wasn't just logical, it was what do our bodies tell us? What do we learn from the imagination? What do we learn from psychology and from science and from the earth and from relationships? So it was a much more integral, as in, like, holistic way of studying things academically.
So typically, after an undergraduate degree, one gets a master's first. Mm-hmm. Did you get a master's?
I did get a master's first, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And did you decide to go on to a PhD program?
I did. I felt like there was more I needed to learn. So I went into the PhD program and was in it for quite a while. Wrote one dissertation that I ended up throwing out. It was on the relevance of psychedelics in philosophy and the pertinence to ethics and ecology. But by the time I was ready to finalize it, it didn't feel relevant anymore because so much had advanced in the psychedelic field. So I let that go, started writing another one on all the different ways that we participate in the formation of our own experience and how that impacts how we act in the world. And I loved the topic, but the more I wrote it, the more I realized I could not do it justice. And living the topic of my dissertation was much more interesting to me than trying to write about it, which was pretty excruciating because I don't think it was best expressed in a dissertation format. I think it would be better as a poem or something like that.
So did you ever finish it?
I did not. I left just a few years ago, and I have zero regrets about that. It was very torturous trying to write what I wanted to say in that format. And
You were obviously in the Bay Area during much of the time you were studying.
Yes, I lived in the Bay Area the first 2 years during my master's, but I pretty quickly moved to the Tahoe area because I just need open space and I need to be in the mountains. And so I would commute to the Bay Area and stay for 3 or 4 days and then go back to Tahoe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so how did you end up in Washington State again?
Yeah. So first of all, I always came back for the summers. I would never miss a summer here. One summer I had to miss alpine blueberry season, and I swore to never do that ever again. So I always came back, and I started working as a wilderness ranger during the summers. So that also brought me back. And I was very determined to live here just because I love the mountains so much. And also my family on both sides goes back all the way to my grandparents. Everyone lives here. And the only person who has left is my brother, who's in California also. So yeah, I just deeply love it here. And what ended up actually bringing me back was a visit to a friend in Port Townsend. I was driving to see her and I was like, I wonder what this Chimicum place is. I'll take a different road to Port Townsend. And went to Farms Reach Cafe and then the Corner Store and Spring Rain Farm and was like, what is this place? It has everything I want and it's an intersection. And I realized the mountains, I wanted to live in a mountain town, and I realized the mountains were super close. My favorite trailhead where I had rangered the previous summer in Royal Basin was an hour away, and it just fell into place.
So. Okay, so you sort of skipped through that part, but you did in the summers work as a ranger up here.
Yeah, I worked as a wilderness ranger for Olympic National Park and occasionally also for North Cascades National Park.
Okay, so a light bulb went off. You met Chimicum, and it really stopped you in your tracks.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. And what happened? How did you close that?
Yeah, well, that's a really long magical story that I probably can't tell
can't
right now in our time span.
Yeah.
But basically, I mentioned to a few of my friends that I had found the place I wanted to live. And within 2 months of realizing that and saying that out loud, I was able to purchase some land in the Eagle Mount area and am there for life now and absolutely love it.
And so what year did you purchase the land?
That was in 2015.
Okay. Now, you know, I think you are the first person I've had on the show who has declared their love for Chimicum.
<You know>? What?
I've had lots of people declare their love for Port Townsend, but Chimicum is, an interesting wrinkle.
I feel like it's a thriving hub of community, and I also love Port Townsend. I consider the Quimper Peninsula my home, all the way down to Quilcene, maybe even a little further, plus the whole Olympic mountain range.
Okay. Well, when people decide to come here for whatever reason, one of the things that rears its ugly little head is, unless you're sitting on a pile of money, job opportunities are somewhat limited here. And most people have bills to pay, whether it's buying land or building a place or whatever. So I'm sure it dawned on you that you needed money to survive. So what did you end up doing to handle that part of the equation?
Well, at the very beginning, I was still going to grad school. So I was living off of student loans. I did come out with debt after graduate school and also working as a wilderness ranger in the summer. So those are the two things at the very beginning. And then after my first summer here, I had been working in North Cascades as a wilderness ranger, but when I would come home, the Disco Bay Detour had just opened, the bar, a little bar on Discovery Bay, and I fell absolutely in love with it and asked if I could volunteer there. And they said I couldn't volunteer, but I could work there if I wanted to. So in addition to my graduate studies, I was also bartending there. I'd never been a bartender. I had never thought I would be a bartender, but I love connecting community and being in community, and it felt like a very magical, alive community hub. And I loved working there.
So how long did you work there?
I worked there until it closed in the end of September of 2019.
Okay. Unfortunately, I was never there, so I can't really respond to it. But I gathered there were a lot of people who hung out there.
Yeah, it was the type of space where if someone walked in, they would meet everyone else who was in the room and everyone would become friends. It just had that very welcoming, inclusive feel. Also, an amazing sound system, amazing musicians, just a lot of synchronicity happened there.
All right. So there you are working at the bar. What about your land? Did you decide to build something there? Are you living there?
Yeah, we do live on the land. There were already two structures to move into. So I moved into one, and my mountaineering partner, a good friend of mine, he moved into the lower one. We're now together and getting married this summer, but at the time we were just friends. Since then we've built some other small structures on the land and have big gardens and love it. We absolutely love it. Like I said, we're there for life and okay. We love our neighborhood and our neighbors too.
Excellent. So I think we're sort of at the point now where we got to talk about the Psychedelic Society and how that came about. Now you are a co-founder of the organization,
yes.
But before we get to what's happened here with our branch of it, let's call it, let's talk about the national situation. Mm-hmm. First off, just so our listeners are up to date on this, marijuana is now legal, but psychedelics are not, correct?
Cannabis is legal at the state level. It's not federally legal.
That's true. And psychedelics are?
Psychedelics are illegal on both levels, yeah.
Okay, and they are called a Schedule One.
Yes, like cannabis, which is also Schedule One, they are the highest level of being addictive and have potential for abuse, which is clearly false, but they are still technically on that list.
I'm sure all along there have been people who believe that this is incorrect and that it should be changed. Now, nationally, is there an overall national organization of some sort or different cities just going their own way? How does it work?
Yeah, so we were inspired by Decriminalize Nature, which is based out of Oakland. They were the first city to pass a resolution locally de facto decriminalizing natural psychedelics, which they are calling entheogens. And several other cities followed suit. So that includes Santa Cruz, a bunch of cities in Michigan. Detroit did it by ballot. The rest of them did it by resolution. Washington, D.C. by ballot decriminalized entheogens. And actually, Denver had already decriminalized psilocybin. That was a separate approach. They also did that by ballot. So yeah, we followed suit right after Seattle. Seattle, I think, did it in October, and we passed our resolution in Port Townsend in December of 2021.
And the society, the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society, when was that actually founded?
Yeah, so we founded that right after Oakland passed the resolution because we realized it was a possibility here and there was a vibrant psychedelic community here. And so we wanted to do something similarly to empower that community to not have to be hiding and also to make medicines more accessible to more people in a way that's respectful and informed and safe. We started organizing in June of 2019 and started approaching the Board of Health and City Council and the Board of Commissioners in July and August of 2019.
And I believe you told me you have a mailing list now or for your newsletter of about mm-hmm. 600 people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
We also have a Facebook page and an Instagram, which also have other followers, but our mailing list is about 600.
And if people wanted to look at something, what's the web address?
Yeah, our website is porttownsendpsychedelicsociety.org. It's a little outdated, and we're working on building a new website that will have lots more information, but it's still a good place to start.
Okay.
And you can sign up for our mailing list on that site.
Now, in your world, you're making a careful distinction between natural psychedelics and, I suppose, chemical, I don't know how you would define it, pharmaceutical psychedelics? What would be the right?
Synthesized.
Okay.
Yeah, so like LSD is a synthesized psychedelic, something like psilocybin mushrooms or ayahuasca, which is a tea of a vine and a leaf, or San Pedro, which is a cacti containing mescaline. Those would be natural psychedelics. So they're ones that grow. And the reason we're focusing on those is because we feel like we have the most basic right to access things that grow naturally from the earth. And there's also some issues with synthetic psychedelics, like testing, purity, how they're manufactured. It gets a lot more complicated when you get into those synthetic chemicals or medicines versus ones that just naturally grow. Like you can grow your own mushrooms easily in your home. And
yeah, particularly in the climate up here. I mean,
absolutely.
I think we would
yeah.
be
inside and out.
You know, sometimes my front yard looks like a mushroom farm.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yep.
I don't know if any of them are edible, but that's a different issue. Huh. Well, how does your organization function? I know you mentioned you have a number of different committees that are working. You're splitting things up. Why don't we just start with microdosing? Most people have vaguely heard of microdosing. You probably should explain what it is first.
Yeah, so one of our committees is a microdosing committee, and microdosing is taking a sub-perceptual amount of a psychedelic. For example, psilocybin, you would take an amount that's so small that you don't actually feel the effects, but it also is still working at a deeper level within you. And a lot of people use microdosing for helping with anxiety or depression, feeling disconnected, creativity. And a lot of people in this town engage in microdosing. It's a really popular way of working with these medicines that isn't as scary as taking a large dose. And it also is easy to integrate the experiences because it is so subtle. Yeah, we had a microdosing workshop about, it was in January, and we had almost 100 people come, which very much
wow.
surprised us. We did not expect that big of a showing.
Now you must have, did you have it in person, or was this
It was on Zoom.
Okay. Yeah. things are changing now, where I suppose you'll be soon having more in person.
Yeah, we have two meetings a month. One is a community meeting, which we have everyone come to before they join a committee. Those are once a month, and then we also have an integration meeting once a month, and both those are.
And I presume people can find out about these meetings on your website.
If they sign up for our mailing list on the website, they will receive the announcements.
So here are some of the committees that, in addition to microdosing, you have peer support committee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so our peer support committee is basically a group of people that are working on offering trainings to teach people how to support each other through challenging experiences. And this committee also is going to fundraise money to buy a tent and supplies to go to various festivals and events to provide support for anyone who just needs a little bit of extra care and support if they're having a challenging experience.
Okay, well, you're raising an interesting sort of issue, which is since these substances are illegal, how do you get a therapist who knows something about it? What are their qualifications?
Well, not all people who work with psychedelics in a way that have a lot of experience are necessarily therapists, but there are therapists that work with them. And the way that we find people to talk to is through word of mouth and networking. There's a very robust underground community all over the country, but especially in this area. If you're connected, it's easy to find those resources. But we want people who are not naturally connected to also be able to access those resources, which is why decriminalization is so important.
Right. Okay, you have a committee that helps with end of life. I assume that means working with hospice and similar.
Yeah, so psilocybin especially has been found to really help people transition and to confront end-of-life anxiety and be at peace with the process of passing. And it also supports people around them who are going through a grieving process. And so we especially want to make these medicines available to those people. It's been, some of the most profound stories I've heard have been people in those situations. So, and we all are going to be in that situation at some point. So, also have a lot of, aging people in this town who reach out to the Psychedelic Society asking for resources. And right now, because decriminalization hasn't happened, we can't refer them to people as an organization. And it's painful. And we want to be able to do that.
Do you also work with veterans groups?
Yeah, we're just starting a new veteran outreach committee. At the state level, we're also working on decriminalization, and there's a woman who's a combat medic who's the only person who has permission from the VA to talk about psychedelics, and she is awesome, and we're hoping she'll come give a talk soon because we really want to reach the veterans in our community that could use support. Entheogens are really helpful with PTSD, and a lot of those people suffer from that trauma. So, yeah, we want to make sure they have that support as well.
Okay, that's good. All right, social justice.
Yeah, so with these medicines, they're not always affordable. And we want to make sure that everyone, including, people who, especially people who have been persecuted by the drug war, have access to these medicines. And so we want to make sure we provide scholarships to make sure they have access. We want to make sure that in different ceremony spaces or people who are working with these medicines are sensitive to cultural appropriation and just other sticky topics that come up in the psychedelic world. And we want to make sure that we're giving back to the traditions and peoples who have worked with these medicines much longer than we have so that it's a reciprocal relationship.
But how, these are natural products. As you said earlier, you can grow your own mushrooms. How can it be so expensive?
So it's not expensive if you are growing your own and sitting for yourself or having a friend sit for you. And that's one of the reasons we want to make sure decriminalization happens so that people have access. However, if you want to go and sit with a therapist, in the Seattle area, it's generally at least $1,500 for a therapy session. So if someone has, intense PTSD or wants more support or wants to go to a ceremony where there's a facilitator, those do cost more money. And we want to make sure that everyone has access, which is why we want to have scholarship funds and also inquiry and sensitivity into some of the difficult issues that come up in that area.
The other day when we were talking, you brought up something that I think we should put on the air, which is your belief that psychedelics are not necessarily good for everyone.
Right.
Can you explain your view there?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that is very important. We want to make sure that people are educated about who should be taking psychedelics. So personally, I think it's good to have your ego developed before you take psychedelics. So it's good to be an adult, to be, over 18, even over 21 before working with psychedelics. That isn't always the case in some indigenous traditions. Sometimes kids do start younger, but they usually take really small amounts. There's also a subset of people who are psychologically unstable in the sense of being prone to psychosis or mania or schizophrenia or even severe depression, sometimes psychedelics can be very helpful for severe depression, but it is important that they're working with someone who is experienced in that way. And if someone is actively suicidal, then psychedelics are also not a good choice. And it's also really important that you're physically safe when you take a psychedelic, that you're in a safe space. It'd be easy if you're in having these big visions to not be paying attention to like the rock in front of you as you're walking. So if you're having a powerful experience, a strong dose, then it's very important that you have a safe setting.
Okay. So we're running pretty short on time here. I just want to make sure that our listeners understand the current state of affairs in Port Townsend. The city council passed exactly what did they pass?
They passed a resolution that directed the police department to make enforcing any laws related to entheogens, including growing them, using them, facilitating a lowest priority. And then they also directed the police department to not have any funding go towards such enforcement. They did add in something about that only being the case if psychedelics were taken in a non-public place. So it's still not decriminalized in public places. But in private places, they should look the other way if they see someone engaging with, if they pull someone over and they have mushrooms, like that should not be enforced. It's still just a de facto decriminalization because there's nothing that absolutely holds them accountable to that. And then also the sheriff's department operates and the state patrol operates within the town of Port Townsend. So they were called upon by the city council, but they haven't yet issued a policy directive or agreed to follow that yet. So now we're working at the county level to get them to issue a policy directive. The Board of Health already has issued a resolution. The Board of Commissioners, we want to also issue an aspirational resolution calling upon the sheriff and the prosecuting attorney to follow suit, because that would make our decriminalization much stronger.
So your next step essentially is to continue your work and moving towards actual decriminalization.
Yes. So we're working on county level decriminalization, which is still going to be de facto decriminalization, but is really important for making larger change at the state level and also protecting us locally from whatever happens at the state level, which might not include decriminalization. There's a lot of money and a big push to legalize psilocybin or other psychedelics only within a therapeutic context. And that stands to make a lot of people a lot of money, but not necessarily empower people in community to use these medicines on their own or in community-based settings or other accessible settings. But we are also working at the state level for an initiative in 2023 or 2024 that would decriminalize entheogens.
Okay, so the end game is to decriminalize at the state level and I suppose onward to the federal level.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on the show. Unfortunately, we've sort of run out of time here. We've sort of got a lot of information. Thank you. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Maryam McNellis. My guest today has been Aaron Redding, co-founder of the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society. In addition to thanking Aaron, I also want to thank Taylor Clark, the editor and producer of Our Town. Many of you don't realize how important the role of an editor is on a show like this. He can edit out our mumbles and jumbles and make us sound eloquent and smooth. I also want to thank you, the listener. Thank you for sticking with KPTZ during these troubled times. Hopefully, we're near the end of this miserable pandemic and opening the door to some sunshine and happiness. Meanwhile, keep listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM. We're a community radio station by and for the people of Jefferson County. Everyone who works here is a volunteer. We give our time because we all believe Jefferson County needs a free local voice. So listener, stay safe, stay healthy. The show's called Our Town. I'm Maryam McNellis. I'm signing off for today, but please keep listening to KPTZ for more dynamic, eclectic, and informative community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Maryam McNellis and edited by Taylor Clark.